Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Inclusive Insights podcast, where we dive into the minds of exceptional leaders shaping our world. I'm your host, Neetha Razdan, and today we have an extraordinary guest with us. He's an experienced and innovative business leader, Fortune 500 CEO, advisor and board member, and a startup investor. Welcome to the show, Demos.
Thank you so much. Great to be with you.
Awesome. Amazing. We have a great, great topic today, transformative leadership, and you know all about it. Let's start with delving into concept of transformative leadership. From your extensive experience, how would you define transformative leadership, and why is it crucial in the dynamic world of business?
You know, transformative leadership is often brought because people feel like something needs to change. The business is no longer running the way it used to. Results are no longer as good as they were. Maybe customer segments are being lost. There's usually some reason why people feel like we need to change, we need to transform, we need to reinvent. Mm-hmm. So therefore, it's becoming a bigger and bigger part of business today.
Perfect. Do you have a specific instance where in your career you have seen transformative leadership making a tangible difference in an organization's trajectory?
You know, I feel like almost every business I work with today in some way is transforming. Mm-hmm. My favorite example, though, is with a company that I spent most of my career with, over 28 years, from startup all the way to a Fortune 100 company. And that's Staples. And Staples was an industry pioneer. Back in the mid-1980s, the founder, Tom Stenberg, actually not only invented the office superstore concept, but really invented the industry of the category killer office products market. And honestly, it worked great for many, many years. It was a super success. The company went through very quick growth spurts. But then there came a time where what was the success of the company, what made the company work, no longer worked. Mm-hmm. And it was time to really accept the need for change. So Staples had to undo some of the very things that had given them success.
That's a compelling example, but knowing Staples, it was a very traditional, stable organization. So how do you balance the need for stability with the imperative for change in a business environment?
I think that's the trick, to tell you the truth. I think for the most part, unless the company is in really horrible shape where they have no choice, maybe they're facing, you know, cash flow problems or bankruptcy even, they often don't face up to the need to make transformative changes. In the case of Staples, it was a successful company doing well, mm-hmm. but just not as well as they had hoped. So instead of the growth continuing to be consistent and steady, it had become level and flattened out. Mm-hmm. And the reason for that was because the environment changed, the customer changed. Offices, the way people do work changed. So the corporation is faced with either keep doing what you're doing and hope it gets better, or kind of like, you know, face the music and try to figure out why are things not working? Is it something we're doing, or is it that the customer is different? And then make some tough calls about change. And of course, mm-hmm. everyone wants to keep doing what they're doing because it has been successful. So I think that balance that you talked about is important because you have to keep doing the day-to-day job in order to pay the bills and so forth. But at the same time, you have to innovate, try things, and you know, ultimately make some changes.
Great, great. I know they say change is the only constant. And I feel like mm-hmm. investing in tomorrow is really important. And that's what you're like alluding to. So from Staples and other, you know, Fortune 500 companies that you have led, you have been at the helm of major transformation, right, in various sectors. So how do you approach this idea of investing in the future, right, innovation within the business realm? And how does that philosophy actually influence your leadership style?
I actually think it's harder than it seems, right? Because if you just talk about should we change and get better, everyone would sign up. I mean, why wouldn't you want to be innovative and exciting and change? Well, I think the reason is because it takes a lot of courage to make change, especially if you take, for example, working in a publicly traded company where you have to report your quarterly earnings to Wall Street, your shareholders, your management, all your constituents want to make sure that everything is going well. And all of a sudden you say, well, we have to make all these changes and invest millions of dollars, and therefore we're not going to meet our expected earnings. That's kind of hard music to face, right? That's a tough set of questions that people don't always readily accept. They feel like, just do a better job. You know, it's the old, you know, run faster, jump higher, and everything will be okay. The truth is that it doesn't work that way. In the case of Staples, I don't know. I would make the argument that maybe they didn't do anything wrong, but as technology entered the workplace, as innovations like Apple, for example, so something as simple, but really speak about transformative, something as simple as the iPad invention back, I think, in 2008, and people can take their iPad or their laptop to a meeting, and also culturally it was much more accepted than bringing piles of paper. Well, offices started to use less papers. They started to print less paper. And if you're a Staples store, and that's what it was in the beginning, just stores, your bread and butter was paper and ink. And so when all of a sudden people say, we like paper and ink, but not as much, we don't need to print everything. In fact, I remember one time meeting someone who used to print every one of their emails and then read them on paper instead of looking at them on their computer. So this was a cultural shift early days. I know, you know, people today may not sort of fully appreciate that, but as the need for different ways of doing business, faster, more efficient, paperless office, all those things became a reality, the consumption and the use of products changed in a very compelling way. And all of a sudden, the very core of what this business did and how they made their money was going away. So you have a choice. You can either change or little by little fade away. You know, the famous example that everyone uses is, you know, the old film cameras versus digital cameras.
Yes.
And the stubbornness of certain companies to not adopt digital technology and sticking with the film technology only to have no company today. So I think often the transformation comes from need. And sometimes it's too late. Sometimes there's enough time to catch up and to go forward. Of course, it's much more exciting and innovative and fun to be ahead of the curve and innovate as you go, but that's not always the case.
Great, great, great explanation. So when I look at companies, I don't know if all companies have this, but for me, it's important for a company to have a purpose statement, mission, and core values. So how do you, or how do we align core values, purpose, and the mission of a company with investing in their future? How do we draw a balance, or are there any tips that you can share with us?
Well, I agree with you, first of all. I mean, I think having a vision is having the direction. So I know a lot of people who come to work and they say, I have to hit these goals. I have these KPIs, or we have certain financial metrics that we need to meet. And that's good. I think it's important to have goals and to be accountable and all that. And you can celebrate the successes and so forth. But I think to have a company direction, and as you're describing, a vision, a purpose, really helps in how to shape and guide the company. It also helps you how to make decisions about deployment of resources, cash, investment, et cetera. And also, if you can communicate this vision and people understand that maybe short term, it may not be immediate results, but we're going to learn along the way, and then this is going to pay back for us over time and position our company for the future in a way that is going to stabilize us both financially and in all other ways, that makes sense. But not having clear vision with conviction, I think, can create companies that sort of sway back and forth with respect to what they stand for and what they're actually spending their time and energy doing. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's funny, with we're talking about transformation here. And one of the things that I've experienced when trying to affect change, trying to get a lot of people to do things differently than they were doing before, maybe even abandon some of the things that they were doing before, which maybe even were very successful, is this idea of communication, and maybe even, I dare say, over-communication, in order to get that message across over and over, and to remind people, to say, let's just remind ourselves, the reason we're doing this is because our core business, which served us so well, isn't doing it anymore. And we don't have the answer, but we can go learn and experiment and test and learn and use financial metrics and so forth to understand where the business is going. We can listen to customers, suppliers, experts in the industry, and then redirect our energy towards a new direction, which may take multiple years in some cases. So, you know, listen, business people, we're all impatient. We want results right away. We need we need ROI quick, right? And so I think this idea of having clear vision, which is supported with purpose, and then clear goals that are aligned through the organization, and that everyone understands their part and how their job matters to the vision, I think is hugely important. And frankly, without it, I've seen many examples that really go off track.
Great. I mean, I'm thinking about what you said, and so many elements of running a successful business. You said communication, I heard collaboration, I heard innovation, I heard engagement. So one thing I want to kind of dig a little bit deeper on is collaboration. Internally, you have to be collaborating all the time and communicating all the time. But during your career and during your journey, I know that you have collaborated with a lot of thought leaders. Can you share some of your experiences and how these collaborations have influenced your approach in terms of transformation or in terms of helping with business success?
Well, in my personal case, one of the things that I think I've been able to bring to any challenge or any role that I've had is the clear and very solid sort of understanding that I alone as the leader do not have all the answers.
Yes.
100% clear. And as hard as I try and as much as I work, I know that there are many other differing views out there, and many people who have expertise in areas that I don't. So to me, the beauty of an organization and a team is that if we've done our job well, we've hired a really good group of diverse thinkers and people with diverse backgrounds. And so I think having the ability to listen to them and to respect kind of where they're coming from and giving everybody their chance doesn't mean that we're going to take everyone's view and blend it in and make everyone happy, because it often doesn't work that way. But trying to understand why everyone thinks the way they do and how they think, based on our vision, based on our ultimate goal as a company, where we're going, how that helps us can be incredibly empowering. And I think what I've seen is that people, if they're allowed to have a voice, even if their specific suggestion doesn't go forward, they feel like they're part of the team. Maybe they can jump on the other person's idea and make it better. Maybe they can challenge, did you think of this? You know, something like that. So I feel like there's a lot of value in that. And I guess one lesson for me that I wish I'd gotten sooner is I didn't realize how much people at every single level really care about that. And once I learned that and started to do things like have, you know, broader meetings, town hall meetings, really good, consistent, and I would say more frequent communication that goes all the way down to everybody that says, your job helps with the mission this way. This other person is the financial person, they help that way. It really helps to bring everyone together. And honestly, there's nothing to me more important than having good ideas, you know, good, solid, well thought out vision and objectives that are the right ones at the right time, at, you know, for the company given their growth scale, but also to have incredible alignment all the way through is the difference maker. I feel that when there isn't that alignment, people may not tell you, but they may not be pulling in the same direction. And so that communication, that collaboration, incredibly important. And you know, if I jump into another transformation, that's one of the key lessons that I think will come with me.
Perfect. Do you have a example that you can share with us where a thought leader significantly influenced a strategic direction or decision in your leadership journey?
We have a couple. I'll go back to Staples for a second. And this one came from the founder. I mean, I always love when it comes from someone who, I mean, his interest was to protect what he invented. Mm-hmm. But I think it was like 1998, when Staples launched, very hugely successful company, launched Staples.com. Mm-hmm. Internally, it was a very uneasy time. Many people viewed this as a competitive business that would cannibalize the core business. Well, Tom, being such a good visionary, and often he's described as such. Now, I led the stores business at around that time. I was actually about to take over. And he said something interesting to me. He said, this is great. He said, all these people that are worried about it don't fully see the big picture. And I said, okay. He said, right now we get this much share. He said, if we have this new business, we'll get a completely different set of customers and some of the same. And to me, it was so clear, like 1 + 1 = 3, not 1 + 1 = something less. He really made it clear that we were actually expanding the pool, not limiting ourselves or even competing with one another. We were on the same team. And why I bring that up is because we created systems that avoided people competing with one another. So for example, if a store helped a .com sale or a .com helped a store sale, we just said, let's give everybody credit. Let's not have them arm wrestle about who should get credit. And we'll deal with the accounting in the background. And that was brilliant. Years later, I actually did consulting work for companies that said, how do we fix this cultural issue? And I said, oh, Tom fixed this issue 10 years ago, 15 yeah. years ago. So that was another one. And I have one more short one in an example, taking over for Barnes & Noble, you know, biggest bookstore company, the results were really in decline. I mean, it was very clear that sales were going down, stores were closing, the .com business was not competitive. And there were just a lot of challenges with morale and so forth. And so I did a sort of a listening tour. I didn't call it that, but it was sort of like a journey around the country to visit with stores. And the beauty of the company is that it had so many long tenured people who were very passionate about books and reading and the company. And mm-hmm. I thought, okay, well, this is an easy thing for me. I'll just listen to what they have to say and try to understand their perspective. There's like hundreds of years of experience versus my brand new kind of read the reports and, you know, evaluate the results kind mm-hmm. of view. And they were so consistent about different things that either were working or not working. So it wasn't a single person, but it was a body of people with a lot of like-minded views and ideas on understanding today's customers, in all honesty, much better than the corporate office had understood them. And so my takeaway was, we have this incredible asset. Let's listen more to the people who actually work with customers and our product. And that was helpful to us.
Great. One thing I really want to elaborate on is, and ask you to dig a little bit more into it, is you said ideas. You know, you heard a lot of people have a lot of ideas. Everyone wants to contribute. My experience, you know, I feel like ideas can come from anywhere at any level. But the hardest part is to actually create actionable strategies around those ideas. So in your experience, how do you ensure that those, you know, those ideas don't die and they are actually put into action? Can you share some more on that with us?
You know, one that comes to mind, I always laugh about this one because it's kind of a funny story when I tell it. People are like, really, that happened? And so at one point, we were trying to reduce expenses, okay? Now, a lot of people don't like talking about reducing expenses because it's not really the fun part of the business. But the truth of the matter is that if you can get your cost structure in line, your business can be healthier and you can actually invest in growth and things like innovation and so forth. So we were in a position where we had lots of stores. I would argue too many, but we got there somehow. And not only do we have too many stores, given the competitive situation and given the channel migration to online, so therefore the need for physical stores was a little bit lower than it had been initially, but they were also too big. They were expensive. So we just said, man, what are we going to do? We are in these long-term leases. We're kind of stuck with these expenses. What should we do? So I did what any brilliant leader does, get help. I went to the employees, the associates, as many people as possible, went to the leadership and said, go to your group. Ask them what they think we should do. Ask them. In fact, we even had competition about submit your best idea for a cost reduction, and you can win some shares of stock or some sort of recognition, not only financial, but the, you know, as we all know this, getting recognized for contributing an idea. I mean, that's even better than getting money sometimes, although people like the money too. We did the same thing on the other side. We said, what, we can play Shark Tank here. Bring any idea you want. And what we promise to do is to write them all down, evaluate each one. If we select your idea, we'll make sure that you get full attribution and credit for your idea. If we don't take your idea, we will try and tell you why quickly, because time is important. And this way, we can keep sort of the fire burning. People can, you know, stay engaged and stay interested and so forth. So we had this guy who worked in finance. He was our a real estate finance guy, and not the person that I would have expected with innovation, frankly, but we shouldn't judge. And he came up with this idea that he said, I love this kind of WeWork type environment where people do like a shared workspace as we now know it today. And he said, we have all this space. We deal with business people anyway. Why don't we just create our own thing? And a bunch of us sat around and said, that's a really good idea. Because the people who are in there are business people, and our core customer are business people, and we have this extra space. Why don't we try? And we did. And we actually went to a company called WorkBar, which was a new New England-based, smaller than WeWork at the time, and still. And we did a collaboration with them, and it lasted for many years, and I think the company went on to do something else after. But it was an idea that came from someone that, honestly, we wouldn't have expected. And I think it just shows that if you ask and you're willing to listen, you never know what you get. I have one more. In the book business, people who love to read books love to talk a lot about reading and what they're reading. So if you get a bunch of booksellers together, it could be a really fun conversation, because by the time we go around and each person talks about what they're reading or what they love, or what book is coming next, or what is next on their stack at their home, I mean, you can go on for a long time. And one of the things that I wanted to learn was, is there anything from the heritage of the company, from the sort of the heart of the company, mm-hmm. that you wish we would do, that we used to do, that you wish we were still doing? So it wasn't an idea necessarily to play it back, but it was more of maybe we missed something and we let something go too fast. Mm-hmm. And time again, I heard the same thing over and over, from California to Florida to Boston to Ohio. The same idea kept coming up. So I thought, wow, this must be a good thing, because this idea is coming from people who don't know that they're all being asked this question. And their idea was that people love to talk about books with other people who love books. Mm-hmm. They love book clubs. And they said, we used to do book clubs in the stores. So I thought, well, what's stopping you? And I think some corporate direction at some point came down. And, you know, my thought was, let the local flavor of a community and those stores do what they think they should do. So the simple thing was just do them again. But to try to bring a new twist to it, when we brought it to our team and we said, can we tech it up a little bit? Can we make this a little bit more sort of like fun and well-known? We decided to start broadcasting via like Facebook Live events and this and that, national book events. And it was an amazing transformative idea where we had an author. In fact, I personally participated in the event where we interviewed the author, and she had the book right there, but anyone can listen to the broadcast around the world. And people in every single location in 50 states were there to talk about that same book. And it was a very cool event that then became a monthly event, and everyone got excited, from publishers to authors to booksellers. And it was an idea that came from the actual employees who are the front line to the consumer. And as simple as it sounds, it had such richness and value, you know, ultimately when we did it. So that's, you know, influence doesn't have to come from the board of directors. It can come, in my view, it should come from people who know the most about it. And that is people closest to the action.
That's so, so true, because oftentimes we forget, and I have been in those situations where you are hired to do a job because you have those skills and you are an expert, but then there is someone else sitting on your head directing you and telling you what to do, which is what Steve Jobs also said, right? You hire all these smart people to do the job, not to tell them how to do the job. So, yes. Amazing. This is really great, because I feel like this is like being in action, like real time, as you speak about these examples. Now, another topic I really would love to discuss with you is growth versus innovation. You know, a company wants to grow all the time, right? It's all about making revenues. But I don't think growing equals to innovation. And I feel innovation is what keeps you in the game. That's my thought, but what do you think about this?
Yeah, I mean, I think it kind of depends, right? So I know the sort of the cool answer would be to say always innovate. And we should say also here, and I think be curious to know what you think about this, like innovation isn't about like the invention of a new product all the time, or mm-hmm. a new software or a new technology or something like that. It could be just the way that customers buy the same exact thing, but a different way.
Totally.
So, you know, years ago, we used to go into a store. They used to put a bunch of stuff on the shelf. We would buy it and go home.
Yeah.
Like I know in my household, my wife prefers to be an online shopper. She's like, oh, I can find exactly what I want. I just buy multiples and I try the ones I want and I always get what I want. And I say, why would you go through all that trouble? Well, that's the way she shops. My way is I like both. I like to go online, check out what's going on, make sure they have what I want. And being a retail consumer person, I love to see both the site and the store. And so I like both. But oftentimes you just need information. So it really depends. So I think this idea, though, of growth versus, you know, I mean, it would be great to have both. Mm-hmm. So the question is, what do you need? I mean, I don't know a business that doesn't need to grow. I mean, Walmart, the biggest company in the world, the first thing they talk about in their recent corporate earnings report was growth. They want to keep growing, grow new customer segments, new products, year-on-year sales, grow channels, whatever, growth. And I think they both go hand in hand. Honestly, you can't run a business the way that you ran it 15 years ago. Honestly, maybe not even 3 years ago. The pace of change is so intense. Everyone says this, but it's true. Mm-hmm. Businesses that were successful 5 years ago can't run that playbook and expect the same results. Competition is better. You know, I work with a lot of startup businesses who have limited resources. But sometimes they're so scrappy and they're so innovative and they're so hardworking, they don't need the big infrastructure. They don't have the big investment behind them. They don't have big, huge distribution centers and so forth. They're able to find different ways to work around challenges, often affordable, but good for their customers. So I think, I don't think it's either or. I think in a perfect world, if you have the resources and the time, do both. But I think both have their role and both are needed today. And I just don't know how anyone can run a company today and not be thinking, to me, in the absolute success of a company is growth. And whether you innovate or not, I think maybe doesn't get talked about first, but I can't imagine today being in a company, whether it's a new company or a 50-year-old company, and not thinking about what is working. What do we need to do in the future? Because the world is changing fast. So, you know, that's one of the things that I think is important to talk about a little bit here, which is it would be perfect if there was this culture of innovation, mm-hmm. if there was this sort of like in the fabric of the company. Oftentimes when you see a company in trouble, they say, we will now embark on a turnaround plan. Well, the challenge with that, And I've been involved in some of them, and some of them are very good and they work. And because I think there's a sense of urgency and people feel like, you know, what's the expression, like change or die or innovate or die. I don't really, that's not my kind of jam so much. I prefer like a sort of a calmer approach that says, what's been going on with our business? If we look backwards, where have we been? Where did we come from? What has changed? And then, in order to succeed in the future, who do we need to be? And I repeat, sometimes you have to destroy the very things that you built that helped you succeed. And you have to accept that the answers, you may not even know them yet, of what you need to do in a year from now, 2 years from now. Mm-hmm. And so I think this mentality and this acceptance that lots of people around who can help, whether they are on your team, their contractors, resources, however, and if you're willing and if you're open-minded, you can do it. But if you want to stick to your guns and say, we've done it this way, we've always done it this way, we're never going to change, I think you're in for a big challenge. And so, you know, this idea of innovation to me and how it works with transformations and turnarounds is very nuanced, because being transformative to me is like this constant curiosity and need to absorb information. And then most importantly, start doing something. Don't just talk about it. And also takes a lot of courage. I mean, I've been in a lot of rooms where we talk about it. Everybody says we're in, and then they don't do it because mm-hmm. the fear of failure, maybe what people think, if there is failure, maybe they think you failed. I like the idea that it's okay if there's some failure, but if you learn something and don't repeat it and it makes you better, makes you know what you should stay away from, where to refocus. Incredibly valuable.
Perfect. It feels like, you know, taking risk is important. That's the only time you will actually be able to figure out whether it's going to work or not, or whether it's going to take you to the next level or not. One thing I always think about being in startups now and coming from corporate is, you know, structured processes and creative chaos. And I remember that, you know, companies like Staples or Walmart, because I worked for both, you always aspire to be as nimble, as agile as a startup, right? And somehow there is this notion of being fast and furious and getting things out like quick, you know, to the market or to your customer is something that startups, you know, have aced. So in your mind, the need for structured processes versus having this creative chaos, do you, you know, can you draw a balance? Do you think, you know, we have to have a little bit of both, or you prefer one over the other?
I mean, when I was wearing my big corporate officer hat, you don't really like chaos. I mean, I have to say, you want consistency, predictability. I want to know the results, no surprises, all that. The problem with that, it can be a little dull, and you don't get this super creative burst of anything because you don't allow it to happen.
But so, can I stop you there? Why do you think that in a big corporate, we don't want any chaos? Why? Why can't we have chaos?
Oh, because you have to report earnings every 91 days and people are expecting $1.32 of earnings per share. And if you just spend $20 million on an innovation that failed and you say, by the way, sorry, guys, we did this innovation that failed, you get creamed and your stock price goes down. But that's a great question, though, and I want to come back with a different approach. And we've tried this, by the way, and I'll submit to you, it sounds good, but it's hard to do, okay? But I would still keep trying. And that is, can you do a little bit of chaos within the structured world? In other words, can you get a budget outside of the core budget that isn't going to really like wreck the company results should it not work? And let the team go and play and test and learn and maybe fail, independent of what's going on. In other words, like get them off the grid for a little while. And again, unfortunately, you need some controls, but not the same metrics and KPIs and everything that the core business is being measured against. Because if you start measuring them on productivity, they're going to fail every time. If you measure them on hitting timelines, there's no chance because something goes fast, some things go slow. Now, so I think if you can create some sort of like subsystem, maybe a little bit off the grid, and you can budget for it and accept that in the culture, I think you have a good chance to do that. But I do want to say that having now been involved with startups for the last 5 years and personally having met with over 200 founders who have given me their startup pitch and having invested in over 25 companies personally, I actually think that there's a lot of chaos, but I don't, and many startups are, you know, breakneck speed, moving fast, but often I find some that are slow and are afraid to take risks because they're small and one failed risk or one failed, you know, project can kill them. So it is a balancing act also with startups. And so I think it is a little bit of the mentality and having an idea of where you're going. Although I think there's a little bit more freedom without a doubt with startups. So I think a lot depends on the leader. And I found that experienced startup founders seem to know how to play the game a little bit better. And you know, they surround themselves with people and have a little bit more of a, maybe an informal structure than others who are just kind of like roll the dice and see what happens. So I like both. I mean, they're fun. And I've seen some that have been wildly successful, and those are really fun to be part of. And others where it feels like you have no idea what direction they're going in. And sometimes they come back in, and other times they never come back.
Wow. Yeah, this is cool. Like, we live in this world, like, it's chaotic, right? When you think about technology, and if you, and I know you have invested in a bunch of companies, and everyone is using tech. Now, if you are in today's world and the transformation or what is the innovation within tech is just insane. It's just, it's coming, I would say, speed of light. Everyone is innovating. There is new technology coming and people are really ready to adopt and curious what's next. So if you are in this kind of an environment, so how do you, as a investor, as an advisor, and as a leader, ensure that you know, all these organizations remain adaptable and embrace emerging tech? Maybe should everybody be like running after this new tech, or is it like, guys, you need to be like moderate and, you know, balance the act? Or is it like, whatever new is there, just go and try to figure out how to capitalize on it? What is your philosophy?
It's a good challenge, what you're bringing up here. I think, and I've seen founders do a remarkably good job with this, by the way. And in fact, just even in the 5 years that I've been involved, in the last 2 to 3 years, maybe even the last one or two, and maybe I'm getting better at selecting too, maybe just a little bit, but I'm finding that founders are becoming very educated. They are going to the right place to learn and understand the impact and also what they need. Oftentimes, they don't need a solution that's elaborate and expensive. They can get a solution that works for their business at this time, and maybe later on, they'll have to come up with a some sort of different approach or different, a different overall level of spend and sophistication. But I think you have to know what your business is first. But a close number two is you need to really get your hands dirty on the technology, because that's what's driving a lot of the startups today. Mm-hmm. I don't think there's a single startup that I've been involved with where the founder has had to learn a lot about, unless they came from it, a lot about the technology to help drive their business and to help them innovate. But again, the good news is that there are lots of experts out there. There are lots of solutions out there that you can tap into that allow people to make it affordable. And I've heard actually companies manage their costs so much better than they did even a few years ago by getting the right solution versus, you know, hiring, you know, a bunch of people and starting from scratch and trying to figure it out as they go. So I think a lot of upfront preparation, learning, understanding first, and then you decide exactly what you need and then go and proceed. But yeah, it's a good dilemma, and it's a reality today. It's just part of the language today.
Totally. And I think I'm with you on that. Just because it's available out there, you don't necessarily need to go and just dive head first into it. Tech can be a boon, but you have to be careful. And ChatGPT was or is one of those examples. You know, people went and did all kinds of crazy stuff in there. But it has a very specific use, and it's very powerful. And we use it in our world, and it makes our job, it makes my life easy for sure. So I think life is full of challenges, and navigating these challenges is what we are here to learn. So business is no different than life. So tell us about a few challenges you have faced. You have such a rich, leadership background. You have ran multi-billion dollar businesses, Fortune, 500 companies. Give us some examples of challenges that were like absolutely crazy. And how did you navigate and how did you overcame all those challenges?
Well, one of the recent challenges for me is learning about such a diverse set of startup businesses. And I actually found, it's funny, I was at a dinner recently. It was like a networking event and it was like all walks of life, right? You had some guy that was a an app designer sitting next to a wealth plan, you know, family office wealth planner, next to a college professor. I mean, it was like
right.
A medical person. There was a security expert. And I'm thinking, wow, there's a lot of knowledge around this table. But you know, running a big organization, especially if you're homegrown and you know, learn the business, I would say it's predictable, even though there are always new challenges. The startup world's biggest challenge for me is the unpredictability, the pace of change, the amount of people who decide they're going to start a business right now. And as a potential investor, you have to decide whether this is the one that's going to be the winner. This is the, and I've listened to the experts now for 5 years, you know, high failure rate. Not everyone makes it. And I've often tried to create, of course, a system in which I can think about this. One of the most important factors in choosing who to work with, whether to advise them, to invest in them, maybe to even get involved in on a board level. And I always think about, okay, what's the idea? I mean, do we even need this idea? And I often ask the founder, what would happen if your idea didn't exist? Like, can the world go on without you? And they often say, absolutely not. Like, the world needs my idea, you know, and I like to hear that. But then I listen carefully. And then I ask myself, okay, realistically though, it's good, but what's the chance that this has to actually go to market? And not only go to market, but win.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you have to deliver. Because it's one thing to say, I need a solution for solving this problem, but then you actually have to have the idea and you have to outperform and out-execute the field that's out there. And then there's the third factor, the most important one, the one that I have like shifted on every year now. So each year I've tried to decide what are the factors that are going to determine success and help me become superb at selecting startups to invest in, to be involved with. And that is the founder, of course, right?
Mm-hmm.
One of the organizations I work with, the managing director who founded the firm, beautifully says, Demos, it's just founder, founder, founder. That's it. And he's right. So I have put, I used to have one third, one third, one third. Everything is important. And now I went to, well, maybe it's like 50% founder and 50% the other two. And so is the founder the right founder? Do mm-hmm. they have humility? Are they a good listener? Will they collaborate? Are they smart enough to know that they're not smart on every subject and that it's okay to get help? Can they execute well? Are they a good leader? Can they hire well? Do they understand financials? What about marketing their idea? Can they communicate the vision? You get mm-hmm. the idea. So I think being a founder is tough, but I have met so many amazing founders. I mean, love them. And others, I feel like they're such an expert. They'll surround themselves with the right people and it'll work. Sometimes it works better than others, but I will say this, my experience over the last 5 years has been rich, largely by the people I've met and by the work that they've done and just the incredible breadth that they can reach as one person. And often yeah. it's two, you know, founder, co-founder, that kind of thing. And I also, I really appreciate the ecosystem and the community of founders helping one another. And I now, on a regular basis, in fact, I did it today, introduce founders who I think can help other founders. And it's sort of cool. It's like introducing two friends and they become friends, you know? And I do like that. But I have found that to be like a profound challenge because even if it's a great idea, if it's not well capitalized, it doesn't go anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Or if it's a really cool idea, but they don't have the courage to take the risk, it doesn't move. or if they don't have maybe the supporting cast around them. Maybe it's like not only the what you call it, like the management team, and often it's small, but also the people one layer out, you know, the advisors or the mentors or the investors who are willing to take the time to say, hey, great idea. Have you thought about this? Did you ask that question, et cetera? And I think it's a lot to ask for one founder to do all this and to run the business. So I think when I find ones that are really special, I try and stay close to them and support them and you know, keep a good relationship with them for hopefully for a long time.
Awesome. I can see your love for startups, and I'm glad
you have. It is, yes. But it's unnerving to me, though. I have to say it's unnerving to me because I feel like once in a while I get a phone call that says it's not good, and I'm like, oh. But I, you know, I always feel like we can solve this problem, you know.
For sure. But I feel like, you know, coming from corporate and, you know, spending time with Fortune 500 and now, you know, now kind of focusing on being an investor, an advisor, a board member for startups, it feels like two sides of a coin, although a lot of learning could be applied. But so transformation, you have done some great work when it comes to transforming these corporates. So what were the challenges? What was the biggest challenge? Let's talk about one. What was your biggest challenge when it came to corporate? I think with startups, the beauty is that everything is just so nimble that you can actually quickly change things. Yes. But doing that same thing in a corporate, I mean, it takes a whole village. So how do you make sure that, you know, when a transformation was needed, you made sure it's happening? And what were the challenges? I'm really interested in understanding the challenge. And how did you basically overcame all those challenges?
Well, the biggest one is what you just started to hit on, which is in a startup, you're pretty nimble. You know, there aren't a lot of people in the room because it's the founder and maybe a few others. And you sit around and you say, we need to change this. Let's say it's something about product. You make the decision and you do it. Mm-hmm. Well, in a corporate environment, you've got a much more built out organization. I don't want to say bureaucracy in a negative way, but it is a bigger organization with many more layers because that's what's needed to run big companies. And therefore, a lot more people to get involved with. Mm-hmm. Also, one little mistake can be fatal for the company. So the impact is much greater. And therefore, the speed in which change happens, which I think is fundamental to transformation, becomes an issue and therefore slow. So oftentimes when companies say, we need to make changes, like mm-hmm. right now. Well, it can't be right now. It's oftentimes a multi-year plan. When you tell a startup, give me a five-year plan, they think you're crazy. I mean, they want to make changes by tonight. You know, by tomorrow morning, the change is in place. So I think one of the biggest challenges is understanding that it takes longer to affect change. Now, it doesn't need to be slow. It could be as fast as you can. You can adopt systems in big companies where you have certain teams making decisions on certain things and you empower them so they can be as fast as possible. But the truth is that it's bigger. You know, someone described it to me as like, you know, a speedboat, you can like turn it around in 2 seconds, but if it's the Queen Mary, it takes a long time to spin that thing around. Now, I do think that some of the things that we've talked about today can help. If you have vision and people are aligned and they agree that we do need to make this change, it's in our best interest as a team, as a company, to move in this direction. At least you don't have the sort of the constant back and forth that may slow things down. Also, I think there are some important things that make transformations work better than other transformations. For example, I think having a structured approach where you have dedicated people, dedicated reporting, dedicated time allocated for this, dedicated budget, and it's sort of protected. I think that allows for, you know, a little bit more speed and a little bit more of like a, you know, nimble kind of like snappier kind of managing the change. And I think also the communication is the hallmark, like super important. Communicating back and forth. This is what the team did. You guys focus on the day-to-day job. We'll figure out this little changes that need to be made, or the changes, not little, but the changes that need to be made. And everyone is sort of like in the loop. So I think while it takes long to do it, if there's a plan and there's a sort of a schedule, and you're also looking at like wins, like even if they're small wins, and saying, look, this is not the whole thing, but this is a step towards where we're going. And, you know, we want to recognize these people who had the courage to make these decisions, or people made some compromises, or made some, you know, tough calls on restructuring or changing vendors or dropping some priorities or maybe simplifying things or maybe even stop doing some things that you used to do, and encouraging that kind of behavior. I think it rallies the team to want to do more and then hopefully speed the transformation along. So it is challenging for bigger versus smaller, but I think there are ways to do it effectively.
Perfect. Yeah. I mean, as long as, you know, you have ways to address the concerns, communication is probably the most effective one or the most basic one, where you can, you know, talk to stakeholders or talk to people who are concerned and just get this transformation going. Awesome. We talked about a lot of challenges. Let's talk about some success stories. So do you have a story that you can share with us where you led a transformation and the outcome was just stellar? What can you tell us?
I'll share one. I can't take credit for this one, but I was part of the team. So I think I learned from it. And this was being a board member at a publicly traded bank, a very traditional conservative bank that, you know, is dealing with an onslaught of fintech innovation and a constant barrage of new technology that's changing the banking system. On top of that, you have federal government oversight like we've never seen before over the last number of years for reasons we probably all know and have lived with. And the team did an amazing job at becoming nimbler, faster, by listening, by, in their case, acquiring some of the knowledge by actually bringing in, buying smaller companies that were brought in and not fully integrated with the main business, but kept at a slight distance away. But it was almost like the laboratory for the business. And I thought it was brilliant in the learning that took place, the talent sharing, the successes. And it was not competitive. The core business viewed that as the sort of the innovation arm and was rooting for them. And so I thought that was successful. And it really informed a lot of what was done at the core business and changes that were made there. So, you know, that's one that is different than my core experience in the retail consumer world. But I think probably the other one that I would think of is just the ability to listen to customers, associates who deal with customers, and look at the speed in which the world is changing, how consumers shop. And reacting to that and immediately trying. Sometimes the best thing you can do, and it's a title of one of my favorite books that I often give away to people, just start. Just start and learn. And even if it's not perfect, don't worry about it. Learn a little bit. And then if it becomes something, speed up and make it bigger and then go. So a lot of innovation comes from not a formal, structured team's process, but it's go try it, empowering people to try things and then report back. And of course, not being afraid that they're going to get clobbered over the head for trying something. So I think there are big bang successes, but there are also, you know, lots of small wins along the way that contribute to the overall success. And I like those a lot. And I think those come from having a healthy, open-minded culture where people feel like I'm gonna give my suggestion and I know I'm not gonna get beat up for it. And I think when you have people who feel like they can speak up, and it's not gonna be held against them, that's a really good culture. And that's a culture of everyone pulling together and thinking about new ways to do things, maybe new ways that the competition is doing something better, or that consumers are doing something in a different part of the market that we can do. And I think that's a really nice way to rally the team and to get everyone involved.
Great. I mean, this is inspiring. We have people around us that come up with some really stellar ideas, and it actually changes the face of business. But oftentimes what I see is we forget to celebrate these successes, right? Mm. We do something great and it's like, okay, we did this, that, whatever not, and okay, let's move on. I feel in my mind that celebrating these successes is very, very important. Not just important, but it's also, something you touched on. It builds the culture of the company, and it also inspires others, you know, to take risks or think out of the box and innovate. What do you suggest, or how do you suggest, companies or leaders should celebrate these successes, bring these success stories, to everybody and shine the spotlight on these success stories? Some ideas that you can share with us. How do we celebrate these successes?
Yeah, I mean, I think number one is do it. Do exactly what you just said, whether you do it in a public meeting, whether you do it on some sort of like company board that everybody reads, whether it's a function. I think you can't do it enough. I mean, I honestly think, and I'm not somebody that likes a ton of like fluffy stuff. Mm-hmm. I don't think this is fluffy. I think this is actually really smart, because your number one resource is your team by far. Mm-hmm. And so I want everyone on my team feeling that they have a responsibility to make the collective better. Mm-hmm. I want everyone on the team to feel like their voice matters, and that if they have an idea that they feel good about, that they have some passion around, that maybe some experience, that they've had a situation where they feel like if we had done it this way, it would be better for the overall results and experience of the people involved, we should listen to them. And I think to your point, celebration, it doesn't have to be like, champagne every time, although once in a while, it's not a bad idea, to toast. But I think recognition is important. I mean, who doesn't want to be valued? Who doesn't want to feel like their idea was at least considered? I don't know anyone. I know I do. I've always felt that way. And I think when you take the time to thank somebody for taking the time and having the courage to bring an idea, maybe you don't take every idea, but at least they're always thinking with you. They're always one step away from helping an idea. So I'm a big proponent of it. In terms of the how to do it, it's whatever the company uses as their communication system. It could be an email, it could be a text, it could be like I said, a company function, it could be a letter, it could be whatever the system is that's being used that's acceptable with it. It could be the WhatsApp thing. I mean, system people are using that they communicate on a regular basis. And I think there's nothing more encouraging to me as a coworker than to see my coworker recognized. That's very cool. When you get the endorsement of your peers, oftentimes I feel like that means more than, the boss giving you a compliment. So in my view, business is competitive. It's often hard, and teamwork is incredibly important, and having people who are feeling good about the mission, the vision, being part of the team, I think that's ultimately what makes one group or one team or one company win over others. And you know, those are some of the reasons I think that the recognition shouldn't be looked at as, you know, a nice to do, but just should be part of what's done.
Perfect. I think you just gave us the recipe for making sure that these recognitions or celebrating success becomes like ingrained or is like a primary ingredient in company culture versus, hey, just acknowledging or celebrating for the heck of celebrating. So perfect. This is awesome. I think culture drives a lot of what a company becomes in future.
So well, especially really if it's governed by the team. I mean,
yes.
The beauty is like, this is how we do it here. It mm-hmm. becomes like part of how we work. Like whenever we get a new employee, it's our job to make them feel like they're part of the family. It's our job to help them, you know, avoid some mistake or to help them with a tip of how to succeed and so forth. And there's nothing better than, you know, the collective team winning. I mean, versus like one individual. And as somebody who has led groups, I can tell you that it feels a lot better when the team feels better. I mean, no question
totally.
About that.
Yeah. Totally. I 100% agree. And I'm also of the mindset that if someone new comes into your company or, you know, into your world or into your team, and the person has a great idea or has a different style of working, and that actually, resonates with what the company is doing, we should be open to adopting it versus, nope, we do things this way. So hence, there is no way, although we know this is actually good, we're not going to do this. I think that kind of open-mindedness is also, needed.
No question.
Awesome. So as we wrap up this segment, so what advice do you have for aspiring leaders? You know, all of us live in a world where transformation is like a vital part. So anyone who is looking to embrace transformative leadership, what advice would you have?
Yeah, I think whether it's transformation, reinvention, change management, however you want to look at it, I think often it comes from a need. We started this way in the beginning of the segment. It's either something is not working or there's a need to move faster or better. And so to me, some of the key ingredients are, as a leader, are open-minded, mm-hmm. listening, mm-hmm. without mm-hmm. a doubt, including as many people realistically as you can. If you can't do everyone, have your team meet with their teams and just find a way to get people's input. People's views matter. Communication. Why are we doing this? There has to be a vision. There has to be clear focus on where you're trying to go. And then really, I think the make or break is it's about the learning and implementation. And I hate to say this, but if somebody doesn't like some failure along the way, they're going to have a really difficult time with this. So you have to embrace and accept some level of failure where you're learning and then putting into practice right away what you've learned and discarding what doesn't work and continuing to move. But it's not easy always. Often it takes a few tries. This is where frustration can come in, where the intended plan doesn't come through and you have to try again. You know, it's the old, you know, back to the lab or, you know, back to the drawing board. But sometimes it is back to the drawing board and trying again. So I think it requires persistence, trust, patience, and some level of togetherness, knowing that you're trying to move into a direction that isn't naturally where you want it to be already. That's why it's transformative.
Perfect. Earlier in the conversation, you mentioned that some of the startup founders who have some level of experience, you have seen them be, better leaders or be a little bit calmer or run the business in a different fashion or in a better manner. I personally feel that having the right set of advisors and mentors is also something that is really, really important to be a successful leader, because we all at the end of the day have to have someone, you know, you can kind of share raw emotions with, or your raw thoughts, and right, someone you can bounce them back off of. So mentorship for me is really important, and I feel having the right set of mentors is important. What do you think, I mean, from your career standpoint, or from your experience, both being a mentor and a mentee, what do you think about mentorship?
Love it. Necessary. And honestly, I wish I'd, I was always like, didn't want to bother people earlier in my career. Like, I want to ask them silly questions. They're going to think I don't know what I'm doing. And I was not very confident in that. But as I got older and, you know, more experienced, it became a very good exchange back and forth. And that made me want to do it for others. And even today, in either small companies or some executives I know who work in Fortune 500 companies, where we still have kind of an informal kind of mentoring kind of relationship, they'll often, you know, call me with something. And it's funny, I had one the other day, and he said, oh, this is so incredibly useful. Thank you so much. And I said, I don't think I did anything. And he said, no, I was able to bounce this off you, and I now feel better. And all I did was I had him play it back. And I gave a little bit of input, and not much though, but he saw value in it. And so I think if you can find people with whom you're comfortable, it doesn't have to be super formal, you know, with notes or whatever. It could be over the phone, it could be face to face. I encourage it. I think it's great. In fact, some people I've been mentoring since they were college students, now they've launched their startups. That's really exciting. Yes. And I also learn from them. So it's a two-way street, and I strongly suggest it and endorse it.
Great. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much for, you know, sharing these profound insights with us. You have such rich experiences, and you were generous enough to share with all of us. It's been a pleasure having you on this episode of the Inclusive Insights podcast. Thank you.
Well, it's been a pleasure to be here. Thanks. I love talking about these topics, seeing you and talking with you about them. And it's a two-way learning. So enjoyed it very much. Thanks.
And to our listeners, thank you for joining us on this insightful journey into transformative leadership. If you found this episode valuable, be sure to subscribe for more thought-provoking discussions. Until next time, remember, the future belongs to those who dare to transform today.